out of stock on the rubber ducky.
Live.
It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
no, just, I'm just marking it. You went out of stock of the rubber ducky?
Yeah, which really hurts considering it's a component of the field kit, which was like the best seller for the holiday season. So now, like, because of one component,
you're out of stock on the field kit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. And it's not shipping until the 20th.
Listen, people, this is why you buy early.
I know, right? So I just tickled the L-node again. I hate doing this. Anyway.
It makes you appreciate those people who say, like, yeah, I work in supply chain. And you're like, whatever. I don't know what that means. Like,
yeah, it's like you work in supply chain until suddenly your stuff is on Mr. Robot in the same month that it's on the breakthrough or breakout or whatever.
Yeah.
That it's on and the same month that it's
And that makes you appreciate when a company is having problems shipping or you know, the delays on shipping a product are long. And you're like, yeah, they didn't expect the demand. You know, you make a guess, but I think this is the part people don't appreciate about that. When a company is like, they're like, well, they knew it'd be popular. I'm like, okay, but it's not like bandwidth where it's cheap to throw a bunch of extra bandwidth at a problem because, hey, you know what? We might get a lot of demand. It's expensive to have inventory. So you don't want to overdo it.
You don't want to end up being an HP with all of those tablets that you end up having to liquidate at $40 a piece.
Yes.
Remember those?
Oh, what were those? Those were like the ET cartridge game of electronic devices.
Right. What was that? I remember you actually got one and we're like, oh, it's cool. It's like,
we got one at CNET. What the hell was that called?
$40. It was cool, but it wasn't cool at the $400 it was trying to sell at. And I mean, really what you were looking at was they were just trying to recoup the silicon costs at that point, let alone the engineering.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, somebody did some accounting and was like, all right, we think we can sell them out and reduce the inventory cost if we keep it at this price. And it's like, what's the maximum price we can sell out at?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I feel for that. In fact, actually, some of this main discussion story stuff has a lot to do with the economics of it when it comes to developers.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, good show.
Oh, man. Come on, NickServe. Don't do me like that. You and I go way back.
Fault. NickServe.
Oh, yeah.
Advantage Fudge. Kitchen.
Hope everybody understands when I say sup startup star in IRC that I'm not making like an emoji kind of
like face. A stars in your eyes emoji, like you're
yeah that's not what I'm doing,
man.
It's not carrot underscore carrot. That's that's not gonna compute. You try to throw that at a script and it's just gonna say bad command or file name.
Yeah, you've been doing a lot of command line work today, huh?
I've been working on a lot of bash stuff. I can't wait to tell you about the product name for the... Oh, wait. Are we... we're only audio, right?
We are only audio.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I think I showed you this.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. So I got the name down.
Oh, I can't wait to find out.
I know, right?
Let's hurry up and do the show.
Yeah. It's like, hang on. I'll put it in Slack. And
okay.
It's the next space.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Right?
I love it.
Right?
Yes.
Because the scripting language is a combination thereof. So it's like it's our own flavor. It's just augmented with a bunch of other cool tools. And the logo is like, right? Like harnessing Patrick Norton with a kilt, if you know what I'm talking about.
Or a baseball bat and a kilt. Yeah.
There you go.
Totally.
Right.
Try not to say anything.
I'm just so happy the way that
like that's perfect. That's so good.
And it was available and you Google it and it actually reverses it.
It just feels like it has been one of your product names forever already.
Yeah.
Like it's like, just oh, fits.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're at DEF CON, you'll be like, can I get a pineapple, a turtle, a duck and a
and the this. Thing. Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's good. Way better than the, I was getting too highfalutin with my suggestions.
I mean, I think I overthought it. I think they were getting a little too heady. And then suddenly this one was just like, yeah. Oh yeah, I know what it does on the tin.
Right.
Like it says it's a Hack 5 product because it's got the cute. And then you mm-hmm. also know how it works right. because of the other thing.
Yeah. The ones I suggested weren't cute.
I mean, at least I never toyed with like the USB cephalopod. I mean, that's kind of like the direction I was going.
The cuddly chimera.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Well, I'm gonna start our video then. So get all that.
Okay.
Got all that out of our system.
Right.
No Roger today again because he is moved in his new digs, but he doesn't have the internet because the internet people wouldn't come until 3 p.m. this afternoon.
Oh, those internet people.
Yeah.
That work at the internet.
Yeah. He called up the internet and said, hey, when can you come over? And they said 3 p.m. Sorry. Not till
late. The pipes.
Yeah.
Or the tubes, that is.
Right. The series of tubes.
They gotta,
they'll be over in a truck.
Yep.
But the internet is not a big truck. It's a series.
No, it is. It's a series of tubes that comes to your house via a big truck.
Yeah. Of course.
Right. And then they have to dig the trenches and it's.
I read all of this in Where Wizards Stay Up Late, which explained how all of that came about.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a book about the founding of the internet. And it, if I remember the book right, it talks about the truck and the tubes and all of those things.
Hmm. You know, I saw good old Timmy Lee's computer at CERN.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they had it on display.
Is it still serving?
You know, I wonder.
I know the page, the first page is still mirrored. It's not being served. And there is like one of the pages from the first run is still being served from the same machine. Like it's oldest served machine page is still up.
I hope there's a squid proxy in front of it. 30 seconds.
Yep. No problem. Ah, yes. You can find little tidbits like that in the year in tech history.
I have a copy of it somewhere. Somewhere over here. I'm sure. I'm not as fast as I used to be at finding these things. Where is it? Maybe I don't have a copy of it. I don't, actually.
But the book is called Scam School Academy. You should buy that book too. Yeah, Strike It Rich saw Darren on the stream here and said, is it Friday already? Funnily, that is a reaction a lot of people are having, including.
What are you talking about? The book is called The Hack 5 Field Kit, the Essentials of Operation.
See, you should reward people who have their books they're selling at hand and buy their books. Yeah, so Len Peralta, even in our Slack, was like, am I on the show today? Because Darren and I were talking about prep.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to say no. I mean, you're welcome. You could always be on the show whenever you want.
Right. I mean, somebody should hashtag DTNS on Twitter with their own drawing of the show, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Although, considering the topic of today, they should use paint.exe.
Yes. Before it gets upgraded in the Creator's Edition.
MSPaint.exe. I got that wrong.
MS Paint. In your Windows 3.1. Okay. Shall we do this?
Yeah. We'll fire up a VM of Windows 3.1 and get this going.
Here we go. Trumpet windsock right in, everybody. Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience, not outside organizations. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, December 8th, 2016. I'm Tom Merritt, and I mean Thursday, even though you're about to see the face of Darren Kitchen or hear the voice of Darren Kitchen. It's not Friday, it's Thursday. It's Thursday, Darren.
What? I just thought I was keeping it liquid Friday. It started early. That's
you could have a thoroughly liquid Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Liquid Friday isn't an alliteration. No, we don't need to force Thursday to be, I guess.
No joke. I am very excited about today.
Yeah, it's good timing, actually, because we have a topic that we're both kind of pumped to talk about.
Yeah, it's like an operating system I've been using all my life. So you may have heard of it. It's
Vax not Slack VMS.
Or, right? Exactly.
Yeah, no, we're going to talk about WinHack, which is going on in Shenzhen, China, and particularly the news that a version of Windows 10, not even a version, well, I guess it's a version, Windows 10, the proper Windows 10, will be coming to ARM. So this is different than the Windows 10 that runs on phones right now. It'll be proper Windows 10 for ARM, but different than Windows RT because it has an emulation layer. And Darren and I are going to talk about it.
Whoa, what the WinHack? I'm getting confused already.
Yeah. Hold on for that, folks. Please hold for more WinHack information. Let's start with our top stories. Microsoft finalized its acquisition of LinkedIn Thursday for $26 billion. LinkedIn will be integrated into Microsoft Office applications, Microsoft Office 365 services, and the Windows Action Center, which that's the one that has me worried. Microsoft also plans to develop a business news desk using LinkedIn. That'll be across all of its content, including MSN.com. And of course, LinkedIn will combine with Sales Navigator and Dynamics 365 for social selling. That's the one that is why Salesforce was kind of interested in it too. In a related note, Russia's communications regulator Roskomnadzor said it had a productive meeting with LinkedIn representatives Thursday. If you don't remember, LinkedIn is now banned in Russia because it has fallen afoul of data storage laws. You need to store all of your Russian citizen data in Russia these days, and they've made LinkedIn the first test of that new law.
Hey, this is really exciting. I mean, it makes the most sense for Microsoft, you know, that of course everybody needs a social network these days. I mean, even Apple tried that with iTunes very unsuccessfully, but you know, it makes way more sense than Microsoft buying MySpace or Bebo or whatever have you. Given that, you know, Microsoft is known for their Office applications, Word, Excel, et cetera, and LinkedIn is a professional social network, but it's also similar to Microsoft, a large attack surface for penetration testers, especially when it comes to social engineering. It's kind of the first thing you hit with your tools like Maltego when you're trying to create the structure of an organization and plan your spear phishing attacks. So it's kind of interesting, two things that are known for their just kind of like general purpose wide area attack surface coming together.
Well, two large surfaces obviously would want each other. From the social networking side, don't forget Microsoft bought Yammer. Everyone forgot Yammer. I'm certain of that. But they were supposed to turn that into their own Facebook, and that didn't exactly happen. And of course, more people are pointing to things like Nokia saying, you know, when you buy large organizations, Microsoft, you don't always succeed at integrating them. And to that end, Microsoft is making a point of going out and talking to people in the press and saying, we're not going to integrate LinkedIn. It's going to stay LinkedIn. It's going to stay with Jeffrey Weiner in charge of it. We are, of course, we're not going to run it as a separate business. But it looks like Minecraft is actually the model for LinkedIn in a weird way. It's going to be part of Microsoft, but given enough autonomy that it should be able to do its job well without getting lost within the sort of Microsoft super state here.
Really, see, I was thinking actually this would be kind of the stepping stone for an organization to have an internal social network kind of thing that would lead to something more akin to SharePoint from Microsoft.
Well, that's what Yammer was supposed to be. At least that's one of the things it was supposed to be.
Well, then again, Buzz was supposed to be good. Instead, we got Google Plus.
For sure. I do hope, and this is I'm mostly joking when I say this, I do hope that adding LinkedIn to the Microsoft Notifications Action Center doesn't have the same effect as LinkedIn has had on my email from time to time. Like I said, mostly kidding. LinkedIn. Nintendo of America president Reggie Fils-Aimé appeared on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon Wednesday and showed off not only Super Mario Run for iOS, but also the Nintendo Switch, which he and Jimmy used to play the forthcoming Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And Jimmy Fallon is a late night talk show host, so his enthusiasm is mostly acting. You could tell he threw a little bit of knowledge here and there that implied that, oh, he actually does follow this stuff.
It's really interesting because the Switch, when you just glance at it, especially without the controllers attached, it looks just like a large smartphone. And now with Nintendo offering first-party games on phones, I feel like it gives a mixed message to consumers. Like, what exactly is Nintendo trying to tell consumers? And can they make money just selling their own titles on those other platforms? And can they do that simultaneously while also trying to maintain a dominance of their own platform with their developers?
Yeah, the bet, and this you make a very good point. The bet is that you'll think of the Nintendo Switch as a console you can take with you, a la the Nintendo 3DS, right? Except it can be a game console when it's at home. The idea is that you don't confuse the 3DS with your phone, so hopefully you won't confuse the Switch with your phone, and yet we'll have these great games that'll be on your phone, and granted, not on your phone if you're an Android user, which is most of the world, but if you're an iOS user, you get Super Mario. It's coming December 15th. And those will be different kinds of games, and they'll be designed for that platform. And I have to say, the way the control system looked was the best look at it that I have seen yet. It's pretty intuitive. I'm going to guess Jimmy Fallon was able to run through this before the show, even though he acted like it was the first time he'd seen it. But he nailed that first run through. It was seven. He got 7 out of 10. He was a little upset at himself, actually.
All right. Well, I mean, I feel like, you know, there's a lot of opportunity here for Nintendo to maybe take it a step further with the Switch and maybe follow in Nokia's footsteps and throw in a little phone call capability in there a la N-Gage, because as we know, that was a blockbuster hit.
Maybe they shouldn't do that then.
Yeah, put that right next
maybe,
to the
maybe
Microsoft
your point
10.
Is that they're doing it right. Like, just you can take it with you, and that's it. That's all you need. Uber, for the first time, published a policy clarifying how riders could lose access to their ride-hailing service. It's a code of conduct for the rider. They've had one for the drivers for a while, and they've had rules about riders, but this is the most transparent they've been about it. Among the things detailed, you are required to respect your driver. You should respect your driver's personal space. Respect the car. Don't damage it. Don't spill things in it. Don't touch the driver's phone. Be on time for your ride. Don't carry firearms in your Uber, which actually that one is the one I feel like is most needed in places that have carry laws. Like, oh, okay, I'm not allowed to carry this in an Uber. That's good to know. Also, don't have sex with your driver. That's not allowed, apparently, at least while they're in the Uber on the clock. These all probably seem obvious, but they apparently all stem from real world events.
And I'm sure there are stories.
Oh,
stories
to be told. I know there are stories.
The novel.
You could get some
of an Uber driver.
The barest tip of these stories have been treated by DJ Sakani in our column from him, Your Private Driver at DailyTechNewsShow.com. He had one column where he just went into some of the crazier things that have happened to him. I'm sure there's more than even he can tell, frankly. And yeah, it's actually a good sign. I know Uber's sort of been dragged kicking and screaming into this, but they are trying to make moves to improve things for the drivers. And obviously this isn't a panacea. It's not going to solve all the problems, but it's good to make it clear, like, hey, riders, you have a responsibility to all of this. I mean, yeah, don't damage the car. All of it seems to be obvious, but putting it out there can't hurt. 7 new titles arrived for Google's Daydream VR headset on Thursday. For people who like to watch, Next VR provides events like concerts and sports. HBO Now and Go subscribers can get a big virtual screen. Netflix is coming by the end of the month, apparently. If you like to play, you can try Lego Brickheads Builder VR. That's a free game with no in-app purchases. You just get it for free. You play it for free. It lets you build with either pre-built characters or constructing your own characters. The rest of the apps cost you money. Those include Gunjack 2, End of Shift, a sequel to the Gear VR game set in the Eve universe. Wands, a magic dueling game, also coming over from Gear VR. Underworld Overlord, a tower defense game, and Layers of Fear Solitude, which is a horror exploration game. It's about a painter set in a surreal mansion. You know the type. Also, the crimson and snow-colored Daydream headsets, or as I call them, red and white Daydream headsets, arrived today. So you can order those. And hey, if you got a Pixel phone and you've been sitting on your free Daydream VR headset code, you can now use it to get the red and the white versions, not just the gray version.
Nice. Yeah, I got to play with Shannon's Daydream, and it was kind of awesome. But at the same time, it very much just felt like any other VR headset. And I hope that doesn't come off like, oh, VR is passe. But while I'm, one, you know, thankful to see ecosystems being built out between Samsung, HTC, Steam, you know, good to see Google taking Cardboard to the next step, I'm still kind of waiting for that killer app on VR, kind of like the Doom or the Quake or the Half-Life of VR. That actually defines the genre more than just the technological improvement.
Yeah, there's things like Res that have gotten close because they're very popular and everybody seems to love them. But I think it's a good discussion. It's arguable whether we've gotten that title, that you know, that one title, that you know, the Pong title, if you want to go way back, that says, oh yeah, this is what this is good for.
I think we're at Pong, and I'm just waiting for Ms. Pac-Man to drop.
Gotcha. Well, you're leaping right past Pac-Man to Ms. Pac-Man. Interesting.
Okay. Well, I mean, nobody wants that, especially on the 2600. Right. It was just atrocious.
HTC launched its first game from Vive Studios, which develops and publishes VR games. The first title is from an internal studio called Two Bears. HTC is at great pains to be like, this is an internal studio, but it's so totally separate from HTC, except for being inside our building and made up of our employees. But it's totally separate. The game is called Arcade Saga. It's a combination of mini games, mostly. There's 84 levels and a complex backstory. It's available on Steam and Vive Port for $30. You can play it on the HTC Vive, of course. Vive Studios is kind of like Oculus Studios. It develops games for its own headset. There's a VR association being cooked up by a lot of these companies, and maybe we'll start getting some cross-platform capability. I'm not holding my breath. But for now, HTC building a new industry here, it being one of the first and best known in VR.
Yeah, and you know, I'm wondering, like, what does a complex backstory mean when it comes to mini games? And then I'm really kind of understanding, like, okay, well, we're in the infancy of this. We have to throw everything, you know, at the wall and see what sticks. And perhaps that's part of it, is especially now that, you know, we're on connected platforms, not like before, where we can actually get real-time analytics of how players are, you know, engaging with the games. And maybe this is one of those things where it's just like, hey, here's a bunch of mini games, see which ones they love, see which ones are working and invoking emotions, give it a backstory. And maybe that's what's going to lead to that Ms. Pac-Man I'm waiting for.
Yeah, maybe. It certainly could lead to HTC having a new profit center that will save it from the commodified phone business that it has been relying on until now. Finally, a joint research effort between Harvard University, the EMPA Research Group, and Adolf Merkel Institute had previously developed a way to remove bacteria from your blood with magnets, which, by the way, I'm really tempted to just stop right there and let your imagination run wild. But hey, that's not exactly what you think. Around half of people who get sepsis, blood poisoning, die from it. And antibiotics are declining in effectiveness, so this is a pretty handy time for advances in this arena. The researchers are able to coat antibodies with iron particles, then those antibodies bind to the target bacteria. That means a magnet in a dialysis machine can pull those antibodies out because they're pulling the iron, and then the antibodies pull the attached bacteria out with them. A Harvard team has figured out how to create an antibody that binds with almost all types of bacteria. That's the big advance today. Previously, they could do this, but you had to identify which bacteria was causing the poisoning. And if there were multiple bacteria, you had to run it several times because you could only put one antibody in at a time. Now they figured out how to create an antibody that binds with almost all types. So you don't even have to identify necessarily. You put it in and run it. It is not approved for human use yet, and there's no timetable for clinical use. So this is going to be a while before it can be used to treat sepsis, but magnets.
Yeah, no, this is exciting stuff. And this is most likely why Sarah in the Hack Shop recommends sleeping facing east to west so that the iron in your body doesn't get drawn to magnetic north in your right. head.
It is one of my questions, and I kind of know the answer, but how does this not get the normal iron that we want to in our hemoglobin to carry oxygen to our lung, you know? To our organs.
Well, it's one of those things where we have a mouse problem, so we get a bunch of cats, and then we got a cat problem, so we get a bunch of elephants.
I think the answer. I actually would like anyone who either knows about this or is medically knowledgeable enough to make an educated guess. I think it's probably that the bacteria in hemoglobin is at a low enough concentration that it doesn't get pulled out, and they make the iron that goes into the antibodies higher so that it does get pulled out. Because one of the things they said in the article is sometimes it doesn't pull all the antibodies out, doesn't get all the bacteria. And so they've experimented with like clusters of iron to make it big enough that it's for sure going to get pulled out. I'm assuming that's why it doesn't just pull all the hemoglobin out of your blood.
Well, what they just need to do is, you know, coat all the antibodies with the iron and then just like have like a whole, you know, you put on like a metal show and all the iron heads, you know, all the metal heads are like, yeah, let's go to the rock show. And then they kind of leave your body.
That's essentially metaphorically, that's exactly what's happening. The dialysis machine is the metal rock show.
Yeah. See, I'm not a bioengineer or anything, but that's the way it works in my head.
That's how you would describe it on the patent application.
I'm so going to get approved.
Yeah.
Hear me, USPTO.
Hey, thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. That one right there was from SP Sheridan. All right. Lots of stuff going on at WinHack in Shenzhen. Microsoft announced a version of Windows 10 for ARM processors coming next year that will support existing desktop apps through an emulation layer. So unlike this Windows RT Surface that I have in my hand, you won't be running a version of Windows that can't run any of your other Windows applications. It'll run Photoshop. It'll run Microsoft Office. In fact, they've displayed that. They've demonstrated that on a Microsoft or a machine running with a Qualcomm Snapdragon 820 processor. With that capability, Microsoft is partnering with Qualcomm to bring Windows devices that use Qualcomm Snapdragon chips to laptops, starting with the Snapdragon 835. Windows head Terry Myerson said, Qualcomm chips have better integrated connectivity and battery life. So you could, they're working on a way for you to have a laptop with a Qualcomm chip in it and an LTE modem, and then you could buy service from within the laptop to connect it. And the first devices out next year are expected to be those kind of laptops.
Wow, this is probably the biggest news coming out of Redmond in the last decade. Seriously.
I thought that when Windows RT was announced, I was like, oh my gosh, they're going to be
able to.
And exactly, it wasn't, because once you get it, you realize, well, okay, I can run a version of Office, but I can't take all my Windows apps off of my other Windows laptop and put them on here and run. With this, you'll be able to do that.
Yeah, so here's why. You have a massive snowball that has been compiling. It's not even a snowball. It's a Katamari Damacy ball that has been just like scooping everything up from developers over the last 25 years, which is called x86 development for Windows. And there's still, I mean, you can walk into any, you know, large organization today and find code from programs 20 years old running accounting systems or whatever have you, and they're running on Windows boxes even to this day. And that's not going to change anytime soon. And that's one of the reasons why Windows is so popular. And actually, it was really exciting about this is it feels like finally, the dream of Windows NT is coming alive. The dream of the 90s is alive, and it's ARM, right?
And Redmondia.
The whole purpose of Windows NT was to actually port to allow Windows to run on not just x86 from Intel, but also the DEC N10 processor, hence the NT, and many more processors to come. The whole idea was, you know, Microsoft saying like, let's work on all of these different CPUs, and it never really came to fruition. And NT ended up standing for never tested, or whatever it ended up standing for.
Yeah.
So this is finally like, you know, the whole industry over the last, since the Pocket PC, we've known that ARM is superior, RISC is good. Let's do this. And here we are, finally.
Well, and this is a better solution than Universal Windows Platform, and Microsoft is going to great pains to say we're not abandoning Universal Windows Platform. We still think that's a better interface for touchscreens. We think it's a lightweight way of writing programs, and we encourage people to use it. They still kind of want people to move to that, but it is definitely them contending with that, like you say, decades-long history of applications. We all have them. We've all got applications sitting there that we've carried from one machine to another and maybe kept updated, you know, of course, but they are things we rely on, and we don't want to have to wait for a developer to come up with a new version for another machine. So this way we're out of it. I've looked at what's going on with Docker, with virtual machines on servers and data centers, and I'm like, why can't I do that on my computer? Why can't I just have, you know, 5 different machines on my computer and then a container that just runs anything I want? I mean, that virtualization technology has been around since the early 2000s. I was running Lotus Notes in an emulated Windows container on Zandros back in 2004. Like, why has it taken this long?
You know, I wonder if Microsoft has literally just been sitting on this, because they tried that half step with Windows RT, like, hey, let's embrace ARM, because with ARM processors comes a lot of awesome inherent improvements. You get, you know, huge battery life improvements, which means and they're also smaller and they weigh less and they're less expensive. But at the same time, you know, Microsoft has a historic partnership with Intel, and they also don't want to cannibalize certain aspects of it. I think we're seeing Microsoft letting go of the operating systems to some extent and really understanding that their value proposition is in Azure and, you know, their cloud services, as well as their productivity software like Office. And so I think that this, like, hey, you know, the last stopgap of them, like, you know, losing out to Linux, which has historically been fantastic on ARM and has been the go-to distribution that you put on a $5 Raspberry Pi, them saying, okay, you know what, fine, now it's time to, you know, bite the bullet to go ahead and do it. Not like this has been like any technological roadblock along the way.
Yeah, it's more about business models. It's not entirely that. The emulation has come a long way, and it's much more power efficient, and the chips have gotten better and are much more capable than they used to. So it is a bit of a perfect storm, right? But you make a great point that Microsoft not looking at Windows as a profit center necessarily anymore, which is, it was all its profits for many years, frees them up to try some things. And the last thing I want to say about this is, I think this points to Windows, why we're seeing Microsoft kind of winding down the Lumia, why we see Microsoft sort of tepid about Windows 10 on phones at best. I mean, I'm exaggerating when I say tepid. You don't want to take a bath in what Microsoft's feelings are about Windows 10 on phones. Because they can do this on a phone, suddenly that phone and Continuum are real, because I can run everything here. It's not just, oh, well, some of my programs, and that'll be kind of cool, and I can hook up a keyboard, and it mostly works like a computer. It is a computer, and Qualcomm is the right partner for that.
You know, sorry, Android, but you give me, you know, if Microsoft offers me a phone that runs Adobe Premiere and Adobe Photoshop and Illustrator the same way I do on my desktop, that's won me over.
Yeah.
Although that's also speaking to my affinity for Adobe. So anyway, I will end it by saying that, you know, Windows as a general purpose OS that can run any arbitrary application has been what has made it such a powerful force in the industry over the last 25 years, but at the same time has made it a rich target for hacking. If Windows 10, as we know it today, makes its way onto smart devices in the same way that iOS and Android and Windows RT has, then what that does, keep that in mind, is it increases an attack surface. Mm. Not to mention IoT. You know, when we start thinking about thermostats and devices you talk to, all around your house connected with your toaster and whatever have you, when those, you know, like the cost of developing those Internet of Things devices, the big cost of it is the development, you know, the software developing. And, you know, software is a huge factor. When you can repurpose cheap desktop development that, you know, already runs on Windows, then there's a massive cost savings, and we'll see more and more devices coming out that run Windows underlying in similar ways to how we saw devices running versions, watered down versions of Windows, like Windows CE. This is going to be something where it's like, oh, well, let's just port our existing thing over to the ARM version of Windows, and bada bing, bada boom, you got a thermostat now connected to your home network that again increases that attack surface. So while it's really cool and I'm excited, it's also like kind of a big deal as far as the penetration testing potential there.
Yeah, and thankfully Microsoft has changed quite a bit in its attitude towards security over the years. Hopefully they'll be taking that into account. But you're right. I mean, the exploit you develop for the desktop can now be ported over to an ARM processor without you having to do anything.
Microsoft PowerShell running on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Table flip.
Lest we forget Intel, which you mentioned has always been Microsoft's big partner. Microsoft also announced a partnership with Intel in something called Project Evo. The project will bring features to Windows devices like far-field communication, such as waking your PC from across the room by talking to it. This follows on a lot of those rumors that Windows was going to make Microsoft is going to make Windows a platform for people to build Amazon Echo or Google Home-like devices. That's what this project allows. I can build a device like you're talking about, not just Internet of Things, right? I can build a Bluetooth speaker with Windows built into it that has Cortana that I can now use like Amazon Echo, as long as I have that far field communication. Also includes improvements to Windows Hello facial recognition, new security intelligence and analytics in combination with Intel. So maybe those will trickle over to the ARM platform. Specs for mixed reality, new gaming technologies like support for 4K and high dynamic range, wide color gamut, spatial audio. We also got some new specs for the holographic VR system that are very small. It almost feels like a Gear VR competitor in the specs they're giving.
Now, those specs are really minimal. I'm really excited about that because then, you know, you get more people playing and then hopefully we'll see whatever that breakthrough app may be.
Yeah. You're talking Intel Mobile Core i5, integrated Intel HD graphics 620, 8 gigs of dual channel RAM, 100 gigs of storage and Bluetooth 4. So if it's as powerful as a Kaby Lake, then it should work. Microsoft also announced that a big deal in China, 3Glasses, they do high-end VR systems, is a partner now. So it won't be limited to cheaper headsets, apparently. Some new features for Windows Voice Assistant coming in build 14.986 of Windows 10. You'll be able to tell Cortana to restart, sleep, lock, or turn off your computer. Also do some music control in relation to TuneIn and iHeartRadio and a few more bits and bobs here and there. But I think the big one is this Project Evo being the platform for folks to say, hey, take an Intel processor in Windows 10 and you can go out there and manufacture something that competes with Google Home and Amazon Echo.
Yeah, and then soon enough with ARM, take your $5 Raspberry Pi, a little bit of GPIO, throw in some Windows, and that's kind of scary. Actually, if I were the Linux Foundation, I'd be a little scared right now.
Which Microsoft is a member of now.
Hey, there you go. Maybe what's in an OS?
Yeah. When does Windows get open sourced?
When does Windows just adopt the Linux kernel already?
When does it? Yeah, really? Seriously?
I don't know. Like, let's find out. December 11th.
If we're going to talk crazy, let's talk crazy. Why not?
Yeah, let's talk crazy on Sunday, Tom.
All right. We got some messages regarding offline viewing from Netflix. Did you hear about this? Do you use Netflix?
Yes, finally.
Okay, good.
Finally. We were talking about this last week, in fact.
Okay.
We were like, what happened to like Amazon Unbox, where you could download a DRM'd file locally, you know, where I basically have the T1 at the office and the 56K at home, essentially, is the equivalent.
Yeah. Well, Ian from cold but beautiful British Columbia has a gig data cap for $80 a month in Canada and says, offline viewing is almost a must here with such small amounts of data at such high prices. I can't wait for the day Canadian cell providers offer unlimited data. And Russell adds, our mobile devices have more memory than they used to, so storing video and audio files is less of an issue than it used to be. That helps make this possible.
And yet it's still never enough.
Never. Todd S. wrote in to point out that EverQuest offers premium servers for a subscription and that some of these are referred to as time-locked progression. He's writing in referral to us talking about the open community that is creating its own vanilla World of Warcraft servers. The basic concept in these EverQuest servers is that they would start with only the base game and no expansions, and then over time expansions would be added. So you not only start off with the early version of EverQuest, but you relive the addition of expansions. Some of them are added based on a player vote. Others are just a timed release. While this isn't a pure classic experience, writes Todd, some changes are too central to the current code base. It is very close in many cases and has a full support from DBG, the owners of EverQuest. Interestingly enough, these servers are the most popular servers they have running right now.
Wow. It just tells you, like, you know, never underestimate the, what is it? The rabidness of gamers?
Yeah.
What would the right word be?
The enthusiasm?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what he's pointing out is to say, hey, why isn't Blizzard taking this seriously and putting some effort behind it? Because if they were able to do a tenth of their audience as much as EverQuest is doing, they might be making a bunch of money because they've already got the code. It's not as much work as you might think. Of course, if you're sitting at Blizzard, you're throwing darts at my face right now. Like, not as much work as you think. You don't know what kind of work I've done. Regarding the Pebble and Fitbit buying the Pebble, Brian Easton thinks Pebble's reliance on Japan Display for color screens might have caused supply constraints. He says, would unrestricted supply have been enough to keep Pebble solvent? Probably not, but it might have made a difference between releasing the Time 2 and issuing refunds.
Oh, I have just the utmost of sympathy for that.
Yeah, I mean, he is assuming because Japan Display has had struggles that they couldn't meet demand. It's not an irrelevant assumption, but it is an assumption. We don't know that that was the case. Just because a company is having issues doesn't mean it's not meeting its supply chain requirements. It's more likely that Pebble just wasn't getting the orders that it needed, but it's an interesting point. Finally, regarding the blockchain, which we attempted to explain yesterday, several people who seem to know about the blockchain said, you did a pretty good job. It's very basic and there's a lot more to it, but you did a pretty good job. So if you want to know how the blockchain works, go check out yesterday's episode. Alex Van de Sand was one of the folks who wrote in. He's a lead designer for the Ethereum Foundation. He said, part of my job is explaining blockchains and smart contracts to people, and I have to say you did a very good job trying to explain it, and Scott did a very good job of asking the right questions. He also added another, when I say he, I mean Alex. Alex also added another reason 8 people would find it difficult to undermine blockchain. That was one of Scott's questions, relating mostly to cryptocurrency. Writing a block to the ledger requires a lot of computational resources and uses a lot of electricity. Alex says, I know someone who spends $250,000 a month in electric bills running a mining operation and keep updating that equipment when it fails or becomes obsolete. That's another cost. These computations don't actually do anything. Their whole point is the cost itself, to make sure people, it's not as easy as calling 8 friends and asking them for a favor. And Alex adds, if you fudge the rules a little bit to get an extra dollar out of it, anyone can very quickly check that you did it without having to incur any of the costs you had to in order to create that invalid block. If everyone rejects your block with new rules, then all the real world cost you went through, that electricity, that equipment, that time is lost. So it's not worth it to fudge a block.
Right. I mean, I think the blockchain is as meaningful to the future of the internet as TCP/IP was. And I feel like it hasn't even begun to scratch the surface of realizing its full potential.
Yeah, it is a new way of doing a lot of things, some of which we've talked about on the show, but there are more things than you can imagine that could do, that I can imagine, that any of us could imagine. So it is an adaptable system. And that was kind of the point I was trying to make yesterday, is Bitcoin is an interesting application of something that may or may not work. Blockchain is a platform that you can use to run a lot of things. It's like the difference between saying, you know, is email successful and is TCP/IP successful? Well, yeah,
right.
Email is a thing you can use because TCP/IP makes so many other things possible.
Yeah, it's as game changing as packet switching, period.
Yeah.
In whatever form it may take.
Well, that's it for this show. Thank you, Darren Kitchen. I know you got lots in the works. Some you can talk about, some you can't. What can you talk about?
Oh, I'm very excited. We are doing some really fun things on Hack 5 as of late. We just wrapped up a series today on exfiltrating data with the USB rubber ducky, which is a way that you can help people perform involuntary backups of their files over to your what looks like a thumb drive and smells like a thumb drive, but it's not. So you can learn all about how to develop that using this piece of kit for fantastic systems administration and penetration testing thingies, words.
Yeah.
I've run out of them.
Sure.
Good thing it is the end of the show. HAK5.org. Find out all about that. Otherwise, we're having fun deals in the hack shop. So if you want to get yourself some pen testing gear, HAKshop.com.
So if it looks like a rubber duck and smells like a rubber duck, it might just be a USB drive.
But you should check. That's another way to put it completely. This could be an absolutely benign mass storage drive. You never know.
You don't know until you know.
This could like not own your computer if you plug it in.
You don't know.
You're taking that risk. You don't know.
Yeah, check it out. HAK5.org. Big thanks to every single patron out there who supports the show, whether it's on patreon.com/DTNS or not. There's so many ways to support the show, including our brand new fuzzy soft hoodies at dailytechnewsshow.com/store. They are super comfortable. And I shouldn't tell you they're the same ones that you can get at the Morningstream store from Scott Johnson's Frog Pants. But if you just didn't want one with DTNS, I still recommend that you go find one with a logo you like on it because they're so comfortable. DailyTechNewsShow.com/store for that. Big thanks to patrons like Joshua Mann, Ari Takalo. Special thanks to Ian Dunsmore, Ronnie Hippler, Jonathan Wentz, and ML Hunt who raised their pledges. You guys are the best and you keep us in business and able to do these shows every day and we love you for it. So please don't stop. Our email address is feedback@DailyTechNewsShow.com. We're live Monday through Friday. 4:30 p.m. Eastern, alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Justin Robert Young. We'll talk with Ars Technica's Annalie Newitz. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Good show.
Yes. So what? Now I'm going to go have a fantastic weekend. Except I'm going to go to work tomorrow.
Can you take a day off?
I might. I might take the entire day to sleep tomorrow.
Yeah. I can't say I blame you. Yes, we forgot Len because he's not here today. He'll be here tomorrow.
Right.
I did like.
I was like, I almost wanted to like throw, and then I was like, oh, there's no one to throw to. Aww.
I know it's sad. Now you know how sad we are the other 4 days of the week when Len's not here.
Mm-hmm. It only makes sense that we do like every now and then play hot potato with Len.
Yes.
Like I feel like I, you know, am bogarting all the Len.
Yeah, you do get all the Len, which is fine.
I do.
I don't think we mind.
That's great. It works out great for me.
BioCow.
For Justin, Len.
BioCow has created a little bit of art here.
Oh, fantastic.
About the Uber story.
No triple X Uber. I like that it's the old logo, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an old car. It's still got the old logo in the front. So there you go.
You know, I recently saw that logo on a squad car in Louisville, Kentucky.
Squad goals.
Outside of DerbyCon.
That's funny.
And I'm like, really? Like, can state troopers be Uber drivers on the side?
With state trooper property, right? It's not just that he's a state trooper. It's that he would be using the state's car.
I thought maybe it was like social engineering where you could just pick up drunks that way and be like, no, listen, I'm your Uber. I'm gonna just get in the back.
That's it right
just
here.
Get in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, see?
What should we call this episode, Darren?
Well, Showbot is saying with by Tinovec with 7 votes currently is Windows up in arm.
Okay, I like that. It's good. That's a good solid suggestion from Tinovec.
It
well
is
done.
Good. TVZ Gun says waiting for Miss Pac-Man. I like Stricket Rich with linked into Microsoft, as well as
Stricket Rich. I think
Stricket.
Yeah,
Stricket or Stricket.
Strike
Crudge
it.
Says Uber reminds me, or Uber. Reminds writers to be human.
Like
no
even
that's
yeah.
That we don't need a no guns and no having sex with your driver logo on the side of the car. We just have a like be a human.
Magnetic like dialysis. Says, how does it
be
work?
Be nice or get out.
Be nice or get
arm,
out.
Yeah. Arm gains some legs. That's cute.
$1 million arm. Although I don't know that it's $1 million. Does something arming.
Alarming. Microsoft does something alarming. That's cute. Microsoft armed with LinkedIn. Okay.
Picks up arms is another good one.
Magnetic antiseptic.
Ah, that's clever. ICU's got some good ideas.
You know, the spirit of the 90s is alive in ARM. See, I should have made the equation that ARM has the fantastic opportunity of being small and lightweight, which is why it always ends up in our phones, which ends up in our pockets. Therefore, the spirit of the 90s is alive in our pockets.
Wow. Yeah.
Or even better, the spirit of the 90s is alive in our pants.
I think we should just name the show that. No one could take that the wrong way.
No, of course not. Obviously, you would glance at the file name of the podcast and be like, oh, they're probably talking about the Microsoft ARM thing.
Yeah. Of course, it'd be the first thing to come to people's minds. What was I going to say?
Redmond flexes its arm. That's kind of good.
Arm and the man being Satya Nadella.
Mm.
Arms and the man? No? Nothing? Nobody?
Yeah, that's good. It's good.
Blood issues ironed out.
Right. Oh, that's cute. Blood issues ironed out. I kind of love that one so much.
Oh, that's good, Beatmaster.
Fallon doesn't flip the switch.
No.
Redmond raises an army.
When I knew Fallon had already been briefed is when he was eager to pick things up, but he never picked up the controller for the switch. He was handed it by Reggie Fils-Aimé, even though there was a second one there.
He
was told not to do anything until it was okay for him to do it.
Got it.
So he had at least been briefed, if not had played it already.
Well, I don't know. The democracy says Windows up in arm.
I'm good with that.
Yeah.
If you've got nothing else that's compelling you to argue against it, I'm
fine. I mean, aside from the 90s being alive in your pants.
Now
it's up with 10 votes. It just went to 11. You know what? It just went to 11. I think first to 11 wins?
Yeah, that's the rule today.
Right?
For this moment right now it is. Cuz I'm pasting it into the 83 tag field. So nice. It wins. That's really how you know it won, is when I put it in the ID3 tags. That's indisputable.
And you used, Winamp to do that, right?
Winamp?
So you're excited about being able to run Winamp.
I just run it all in the DOS command line.
On your phone, right?
Yes.
You're like, oh, think of all this awesome legacy software I can now run on
a phone. I can whip the llama on my phone now.
Right.
Yes. And RegEdit on my phone.
Ooh, that sounds good. I mean, just think about the documentation where it's like, oh, the workaround for this thing is to, you know,
Disk Cleaner X.
Right. Pull up PowerShell and start issuing some esoteric commands.
Yeah.
Love it.
Good times.
Object wscript.shell run wscript arguments.
I'm defragging my phone right now. Hold on.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, wait. Dang it. I'm using... Dang it. Swift key auto-corrected. That's supposed to be a quotation mark, not two single quotes.
Oh, auto-corrected defrag to F disk.
I just imagine the attack ad from like... Hi, I'm a Mac, I'm a PC ads.
Yeah.
Between like running Windows on your phone.
Oh my gosh.
I hang on, my phone blue screened.
Kernel panic.
Now you can hourglass in your pocket.
Anytime you try to do something.
Right? I mean, in fact, I watched the video demo of the like Photoshop running on the ARM, the Qualcomm 830, that was edited. Because he opens up Photoshop, and yet then it loads and just opens the image.
You mean it's the video was edited?
I think it was edited. I think it was chopped down just a bit.
And I even don't think it was edited to fake things, though. I think it was edited.
They definitely did that.
They edited it for time. Like, they did it on stage, right?
Okay, fair enough. Even still,
but it probably took longer. You're right.
You can see, like, even just like pulling up the you know system properties in the control panel, like it took a moment to even show you.
It's going to take a minute on a Qualcomm. Like if you notice, they showed it off on what? Let me pull that back up. They showed it off.
This is such a half step. You know, like having emulation, having like software emulation is just like, look, I think it's like one of those things where like they know they have to do it in order to stay relevant in the industry and to spur, you know, like that's going to be the next e-reader. That's going to be the next 3D TV, the next, what were they called?
UMPCs?
What were those EPCs called?
UMPCs?
Netbooks.
Netbooks.
Yeah. The next generation of that, obviously, not little Celerons x86. They're gonna be ARMs. Like CES 2018 is gonna be nothing but $100 computers running Windows 10.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
that's what UMPCs were. They all ran Windows, even though it wasn't actually, you know, it was Windows CE, right? But they all ran Windows and tried to pretend like they were Windows machines.
Right. And so now, you know, manufacturers will have the ability to actually put like quote unquote real Windows on it. But because right. the emulation is done in software, it's going to, I mean, it has the opportunity to actually do a lot of damage to the brand if they don't do it well, which is maybe why they're partnering with Qualcomm to do it first. Because it's not actually, the story isn't really Windows ARM, it's Windows Qualcomm Snapdragon.
Yep.
Right.
And that's what I was going to say is they showed it on an 820. But they're shipping it on an 835. So
got it.
I think what they're saying, what that implies to me is it'll run on an 820, but it'll run acceptably on an 835. And we're working with Qualcomm to make sure that's the case.
Yeah.
And you're going to find all those edge cases where you like, oh, I wanted to bring this program over and it does run, but it runs crappy because they're going to optimize for particular things, especially things like Office.
Well, to their credit, at least, the things like the storage, you know, I/O, the GPU, that's pretty much passed right through from the hardware abstraction layer right over to those actual chips. Yeah. So that's good. But it's really just the crunchy stuff, you know, the CPU crunching where that's done in software. And hopefully that's one of those things that can just be over time kind of turned into hardware, hopefully.
What you mean, like Qualcomm makes an emulation chip?
Yeah. What I'm saying is like, oh, figure out what, you know, registers need to be put into the actual chip so that it can run native.
So you're waiting for the Qualcomm EOC module that can run Windows 10 native on bare metal.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is like to be able to say, oh, this entire back catalog of 25 years worth of software to be able to run decently without being able to recompile it. Obviously the only way you can do that on a different CPU architecture is to have basically a hypervisor, have emulation, you know, in between. And that's fine if it's beefy enough, but you know, typically it's the other way around. It's emulating an iPhone or emulating an Android something strong like an x86, not the other way around, emulating something heavy like Windows on something tiny like ARM.
Well, it's kind of crazy that you can do this at all on ARM.
Yeah.
Like that's how much progress has been made on mobile.
No, absolutely. I'm not discrediting this.
No, and I know you're not. It just kind of struck me when you put it that way of like, yeah, usually you're emulating the other direction. I'm like, well, crap, the fact that we can even like try to do this is insane.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Oh, it's huge. Absolutely. You know, obviously Windows RT is going to have better performance. This is why they said like their whole unified apps aren't going away.
Right.
Those are the future, but also they understand they can't get to that future if no one's going to buy an ARM-based PC if it will only run those unified apps. So really, another way to look at this is kind of like when Vista came out and nobody wanted to move to it because XP, there was so much software that was specific for kind of like your XP and before generation kernels, and they said, well, we've got this emulation thing where you right-click on the exe, hit properties, go over to compatibility and check the box for compatibility mode, and it actually runs it in a virtual machine, kind of completely transparent to you. In many ways, this is just that.
But again, it's still the other direction, right? Because Windows Vista was likely to be running on a more powerful machine than XP was.
Right. Well, exactly. And so this is the first time where we're seeing it upside down.
Yeah.
So that's why it's mind-boggling that this thing works at all. So, I mean, I really wonder what kind of special sauce is in the, well, let's see. That's kind of interesting, actually. That brings up a point, right? What kind of special sauce is in the Snapdragon 835? And also, how long has this kind of partnership been going on between Microsoft and Qualcomm in that it will run in an 820? It kind of insinuates that perhaps this has been in development for as long as Windows RT had begun years ago, but has only now come to fruition where it's actually stable enough and can get out the door. I wonder how many engineers have been sitting on their, you know, hands, just like, you know, like pinching their lips going,
you can see the project map that used to be Windows RT, then became Windows Phone, and has now landed with Windows 10 on ARM.
And it's almost like in a perfect world, Windows RT never would have been released. It would have waited until all of the, you know, check boxes were checked in the development cycle of actually getting it to run all of the things that it should, which is, you know, all the legacy.
Well, Windows RT was the result of that argument that you were just making, which is it's never as good when you have to go through an emulation layer. So they're like, well, right, we'll bring most of the things people need on these smaller machines over and it'll be fine. And it wasn't, because people didn't like it. They didn't like that it looked enough like Windows without being the same Windows.
Yeah, yeah. Well, had it had this from the get-go, Windows RT would have been a much different experience.
Yeah.
So maybe this is classic Microsoft, though. It's like the redo. It's like, how many times did they have to rebrand their phone thing? Windows CE, Windows for pen computing, Windows Pocket PC, Windows Pocket PC Phone Edition, Windows
Tablet Edition.
Right? You know, you went through so many iterations of Windows Phone 7, Windows Phone XYZ, right? But this classic Microsoft, they're just like, okay, give it, just ship whatever the best we have today is, even though they know what they need ultimately.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, that dev work takes time.
Win-C-E.
And you got to keep making money while you're trying to get there. So sell what you got while you're trying to make the correct product.
Although shutting down the Nokia handset business that they acquired is a huge example of committing to that path and saying, yeah, that was the wrong path. And it's going to cost us a lot of money.
Saying they don't make missteps like every other company.
But I'm just saying, like, they could have tried to keep that going for the reason you just said of like, well, we've got to sell what we have. But they realized that's just pouring good money after bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to think how different the last 5 years of Microsoft would have been with this technology today. And is it something that was a factor of the software maturing to a certain point, or was it a factor of the hardware maturing to a certain point, or was it a factor of just getting the business relationships between the Qualcomms of the world and the Microsofts of the world in place such that this could come to fruition? Because again, this is actually the dream of the 90s. This was the whole point of Windows NT, was to finally get Windows away from, you know, basically a gooey lipstick on a pig that sits on top of Microsoft DOS on x86. And, you know, so you can have that clicky boonty and instead be an actual operating system for all chips under the sun.
Well, the Uber dream is that we don't care about the operating system, that we are able to do the things we want to do without it mattering what system we're using, right? It's a computer and it does the things. And the internet has been the application layer for that. And that's why cloud is kind of taking up that mantle of like, hey, just run things in the cloud. But we're finding that even with, you know, better internet, it still isn't great to run everything in the cloud. And so you've got, like, I remember Netscape Constellation was like, oh, well, what we'll do is we'll run on top of Windows, and then it won't matter that you're using Windows. You'll just use Constellation, and then we can have Constellation everywhere. And then, of course, that folded. So there's all these different efforts over the years to reach that one dream of being not only the thing that allows you to run everywhere, but owning that platform. And trying to own the platform is always what gets in the way of it succeeding.
Yeah. You know, I would say tell that to Google and Chrome OS. And yeah, I was actually just trying to find their market share and it doesn't even register. It's not a percentage that I can find.
Really? It's actually pretty good.
This is NetWare. Hang on. Maybe I'm looking at the wrong.
Depends on what you look at.
Market statistic. I'm looking at netmarketshare.com. And they're saying, they're basically saying 47% Windows 7, 23% Windows 10, 8% Windows XP, 8% Windows 8.1. I'm sorry, everyone. 2.3% Linux. But this is desktop, by the way.
Right.
And then the rest is like a weird hodgepodge of various versions of OS 10.
IDC in April estimated that Apple sold around 1.8 million Macs, giving it 13% market share in fourth position, whereas Chromebooks, Chrome OS sold 1.8 million in that same period. So if you look at usage, you're going to see much lower percentage numbers because historically there's fewer of them out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually, in some ways, Google did it first. Chrome OS was ARM from the get-go.
Yeah.
They were armed and ready.
You might say.
They went backwards, porting it later to x86 with the Pixel.
Yeah. Hmm.
But again, Google, unlike Microsoft, doesn't have a legacy catalog of 25 years worth of x86 apps.
Correct. They also mostly a K through 12 sales process.
At the same time, you really have to ask, what are these of the 25 years of legacy apps? Like, okay, you know, it's one thing to throw around the whole like, well, that one accounting system that was written in Java in the 90s and needs to, okay, that's, I think in fact that in some ways is an edge case. And what's really telling is the fact that what did Microsoft tout running on ARM? What application, what quote unquote killer app? Photoshop.
Office and Photoshop.
Still,
yeah.
Photoshop's still the killer app.
Yeah.
So I think
when you want to show something process intensive that everyone knows what it does.
That's not process intensive. AutoCAD is process intensive. Well,
but Photoshop is more process intensive than a browser, right? So
yeah, a little. Yeah, okay. But in this day and age, although, however, when you consider that it can actually utilize the GPU, and that's something that's just getting passed right through the emulation layer. So if anything, Photoshop is the best case as far as the people's perception of its CPU hit versus the actual reality of the situation.
Totally. Because we all know Google Chrome Helper uses way more than Photoshop.
Right. I mean, OpenGL, or not OpenGL, WebGL can do similar stuff just in the browser to Photoshop. So, you know, it's, I'm just saying, as far as like our perception, Photoshop still has that. And yet at the same time, a lot of that's pushed off to the GPU. What would have been more telling is to see something like Premiere, you know, doing actual video editing or something like that on this, or AutoCAD, things that actually really require a lot of CPU power.
I bet they can't make that work even in a demo right now.
No, because I mean, if they could have, obviously they would be touting that because that would be, you know, people know, okay, on the like level of things you've got, you know, you've got Office apps and web browsers. Then above that, you got things like Photoshop and then you've got video editing. And then on a high end, you've got like, you know, high end computer aided drawing and video gaming, you know? So them showing like, I mean, I don't know, in some ways it's really just like, it's a technological leap in that, okay, well, technically it can run these apps, but in some ways it's only kind of a half step above what you already have with Windows RT.
But think about it. If you're running an enterprise and the majority of the users just need Outlook, Microsoft Word, Excel, and maybe a couple other of your in-house apps that aren't super complex, and you say, hey, guess what? You can give them a phone. It will be their corporate phone. And also when they get to work, they plug it into a dock and it becomes their computer. Like that's.
Or a 10 ounce laptop.
Yeah.
That costs $150. Yeah. No, I get you. That can join a, I mean, one of the big things that they showed is, hey, look, it'll join a domain because that's still a thing. I mean, that very much. And I don't think that's going away tomorrow.
All right, folks, I think we've solved everything for Microsoft. So let them know to look at this post show. And
right. I tell. Yeah. Send this on to Sasha.
Yeah. He'll with our compliments. Well done.
Yeah. You know, kudos. Congratulations. You deserve it.
Back with Justin, Robert Young, and Annalie Newitz tomorrow. Bye, folks.